Okay, so mine is the last presentation for the plenary session. We thank those of you who have hung in there with us throughout the duration. We really appreciate that. I do want to mention that this, my project here, and Steve Carlson just finished a master's thesis on this, and a lot of the data will come from that. Is a project that actually owes a lot to both Gary, who I was doing work on heirloom vegetable varieties and documenting some apples in Appalachia, and Gary really encouraged me to focus more on documenting apple diversity. And then this project is part of a broader project that I'm both developing, and it also plugs into Will McClatchy and Dave Reedy's larger orchard network project at BRIC. So I just want to say that. I was actually thinking when I was introducing the panel, between Gary and Will speaking, I was like, it's a little intimidating being in the middle of two giants of ethnobiology. And then I think, but I'm a lot taller than both of them. All right, I thought I might get a few laughs on that. So here we go. Biocultural diversity and the political ecology of climate change on Appalachian orchards. Last summer, we set out to document biocultural diversity in western North Carolina orchards and understand the political ecology of climate change perception amongst Appalachian orchardists. We hope to contribute to understanding of global climate change and its effect on local agricultural systems and microclimates, in addition to broadening knowledge of the social and political influences on decision-making processes. Previous research on the relationship between climate change and agriculture is focused primarily on annual crops, for good reason, as Gary reminded us earlier. But an inquiry into the management decisions of orchardists with perennial crops provides a more longitudinal record of adaptation to climate change. Apple trees are long-term crops, living for at least 20 to 40 years. They're highly sensitive to changes in the environment. As a result, orchard managers are often close observers of even small changes in local climate patterns. My previous research found that southern and central Appalachia is home to 633 distinct apple varieties, contributed to its status as the most diverse food shed in the U.S., Canada, and northern Mexico that we've currently studied. And a lot, the comparative aspect of that has been through Gary's Renewing America's Food Tradition Alliance. There's been agrobiodiversity research in food sheds all over most of North America. Appalachian apple diversity allows orchard managers to be highly discriminating when deciding what varieties to grow. An inquiry into the selection process of orchardists is useful not only understanding climate change in the Appalachian food shed, but contributes to understanding of climate change and agricultural decision-making more generally. And here I'll pop up some of the research questions that are involved in this project. As global consumption and population levels continue to rise and extreme weather events are becoming more frequent, research into the adaptation strategies of local agricultural systems is critical for ensuring the sustainability of the world's food supply. This is almost a continuous theme throughout all our presentations. There's now widespread scientific consensus that human activity is impacting climate change. For example, rising CO2 levels are leading to increased global temperatures and climate fluctuations. Agriculture has evolved over a long period of climate stability, and as we increasingly face climate unpredictability, ensuring food security is being recognized as global top priority. Important methods to ensure food security include in situ conservation strategies and in vivo planting practices, which allow genetically diverse crops to co-evolve and develop resilience to environmental stresses. The FAO has recognized that genetically diverse crop populations have a greater potential to adapt to climate change. Because of the high levels of apple diversity in western North Carolina, management decisions of local orchardists will have an effect on local crop diversity and therefore on the future of food security in the region. Apple orchards are measurably impacted by climate change. Spring flowering time preceding apple production has been shown to significantly correlate with air temperature. Since 1895, southern Appalachia has experienced a slight increase in air temperature with a corresponding 1% decrease in rainfall. Microclimate fluctuations are experienced by specific orchards according to variables such as aspect, elevation, soil type, and rainfall, and may not be captured in cumulative statistics for the region. Therefore, ground-truthing scientific data with local observations is important in understanding how climate change may be impacting orchards in ways that existing climate data cannot inform us. It is critical to document firsthand observations while simultaneously seeking to understand how management decisions are taking place on the ground. Because climate change has recently become such an important topic of political debate in the United States, and particularly here in Texas, in this part of the country, right? It is, I mean, I could probably be fired for doing this if Rick Perry found out about it. It is important to understand how beliefs concerning the human impact on climate change may be affecting management decisions. Such beliefs are often influenced by political and religious affiliations, socioeconomic trends, cultural norms, and the availability of local information in circulation regarding climate change. While anthropologists have become increasingly involved in climate change research over the past decade, inquiries into farmers' observations, perceptions, and reactions to climate change are still underexplored, with notable exceptions like Gary and several of the people on our panel. Contributing to this growing body of knowledge about how local communities currently perceive and react to climate change is important for creating resilient responses at the global level. This project provides insights into the perception of climate change and informs the implementation of sustainability programs, both locally and globally. To facilitate this goal, the results of the project will be shared with the Southern Appalachian County Extension offices and the Appalachian Institute for Mountain Studies. Community outreach events will be conducted in the form of educational workshops and public demonstrations at the Appalachian Institute for Mountain Studies that I direct in North Carolina. We're working up a SARE grant for that right now that will help instruct the public on the application of sustainable orchard management practices in an increasingly unpredictable climate. We're also collaborating and sharing comparative results with two international climate change projects run by both BRIT, Botanical Research Institute of Texas, and the Western Norway Research Institute, where Christine works. So methodologically, our project applied a mixed methods approach. In order to recruit apple orchardist participation, both convenience and snowball sampling methods were used. One of the leading online apple orchard directories for North America lists over 90 registered orchards in North Carolina, and this registry served as a foundation to begin convenience sampling. We snowball sampled until 22 orchardists in total were interviewed. This was over 3 months of last summer. Researchers, including myself and Steve Carlson here, we visited each participating orchard to conduct in-depth, open-ended oral histories with the most senior orchard manager. Qualitative data from the oral histories was used to provide information on orchardist observations of climate change, how and why orchardists make decisions, and if correlations exist between their perceptions of climate change and their political affiliations and cultural beliefs. Oral histories documented how long the orchardists have managed their orchards, what climatic changes they have observed over time, and what future changes they may anticipate. We also address what criteria managers consider when selecting apple varieties for cultivation. Interviews included a free listing exercise asking participants to list apple varieties that are currently being grown, as well as what varieties they have grown in the past and are no longer perpetuating. For each variety listed, information was obtained about its cultural and agroecological characteristics, as well as why it was selected for cultivation. Orchardists were asked to describe current and historical changes in management practices. At the end of each visit, participants were asked if they believe anthropogenic climate change is occurring, what sources of information they have access to, regarding climate change, and what their political affiliation did. We did this at the end of every interview, right? It's very important. We didn't want to lead in with, hey, we're studying climate change. Slam door. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. Okay, so they were asked to fill out benchmark socioeconomic surveys that included demographic data such as age, gender, level of education, ethnicity, income level, and other relevant variables. Oral histories were recorded, transcribed, and entered into Atlas TI, where coding was guided by a grounded theory methodology in order to identify key concepts, themes, and relationships in the data. And to analyze the free listing and benchmark socioeconomic surveys, we manage those in Microsoft Excel. I'm not going to be able to get to all the results we got to, but I'm going to now shift into focusing on some of the what we think are some of the more important ones. So in terms of apple biodiversity, we were able to document 977 apple varieties being grown among 22 orchards that we visited for an average of 44 apples per orchard. When duplicates of different heirloom varieties were eliminated, we came up with 450 different heirloom apples being grown amongst the 22 orchards, which averages out to about 22.5 heirloom varieties being grown per orchard. And this was somewhat skewed. There were a few preservationist types that we interviewed, so a few of the orchards had a lot of this diversity on it. As I mentioned earlier, I had previously documented, with the help of Gary and our research team, documented 633 heirloom apple varieties for southern and central Appalachia. During the summer research, we were able to provisionally add 272 varieties to that total, and it's now up to 906, possibly up to that, that are growing in this food shed. What we have to do now is, this is raw data, and we have to go back and correlate it with historical sources. So we found 272. It may turn out to be 160 or so once we work through it and figure out what is actually eliminating multiple naming practices and documenting things historically, etc. So again, this is the largest area of apple diversity that we know of in most of North America. Appalachia is also the second most diverse temperate forest region on the planet. It's the world center for salamander diversity. If you haven't been there, it's a wonderful place to go. Of course, I'm a local, so I'm a little biased. But the documentation of so much agricultural biodiversity, yeah, that's right, next year. I didn't quite catch that. Walk with me in the woods. We'll have fun. Truly makes it one of the biocultural vegetative wonders of the world. It's not just bluegrass music and good home cooking, right? So amongst our 22 participants, we're predominantly male, of Northern European descent, 62 years old, Southern Baptist Republican with a high school education and a medium income of about $45,000 a year. So for an anthropologist, right, this doesn't seem like a very exciting segment. But I will say, most of you go up there, if you add the Appalachian part to it, it becomes very, very interesting. You may feel like you're in a different world. So out of these 22 orchardists, 82% agreed that the climate is changing. So they agreed the climate variability was happening, right? So natural variation. An interesting finding amongst this was that 100% of orchardists that were third, fourth, or fifth generation growers acknowledged either climate change or climate variations, whereas only 71% of the first or second generation orchardists did. So all the people who had been there the longest were noticing either climate variation or climate change. And the only growers who responded that they were not witnessing any changes were more recent orchardists, first or second generation. The growers working on older generation orchards, they were less likely to say that humans were causing climate change, but none of them said that humans were not. They were just more likely to be unsure or noncommittal. Okay, and the growers on younger generation orchards, they were actually more likely to say humans are causing climate change, but 50% of them also asserted that humans were not responsible for climate change. Impartial answer to our question on political ecology, 71% of respondents who did not think that humans were contributing to climate change were Republican. And Will was talking about this earlier, right? Whereas 87.5% of respondents who thought humans are contributing to climate change were either independent, Democrat, or other, and one not responding to the question on political affiliation. So given the landscape of our political landscape in America, this is perhaps not surprising, right? Only one Republican actually believed in anthropogenic climate change. So two emergent themes for our analysis are that early blooming apple trees are at risk because of warmer winters and springs, especially, and Will talked about this as well, especially when they're at the bottom of a slope where the cooler air tends to gather. Additionally, consumer demand is hindering heirloom apple conservation because it is driving the planting of newer apple varieties, which are more susceptible to climate change than heirloom varieties. Across the board, these guys are saying, we're having to plant what the people want, what the consumers want, but these are the most susceptible varieties to the weather patterns we're noticing. And they felt pretty well trapped by those conditions. To date, the majority of growers are reacting to consumer demand when choosing planting strategies instead of perceived threats to climate change. When asked about their future predictions about weather patterns, all of the growers either answered, we don't know, or it's going to stay the same. There was not a willingness to sort of predict future climate fluctuations. At first, this was a disappointing finding, right? We're thinking, well, these guys are going to know because they're living, and women, they're living so close, they've been there for so long. So we thought, dang, you know, they're not going to predict it for us. But then we realized that because of the current unpredictable weather due to climate change, that they're recognizing they were not confident in predicting what was going to happen in the future. So their refusal or lack of or giving predictions was in and of itself a finding, right? I mean, they had already said it's going to stay the same, which means, based on their responses, that it's totally unpredictable now, right? And this is the new normal. So uncertainty about future weather patterns could serve as a detriment, unfortunately, to adaptive management strategies, and particularly for those growers who do not think that human-induced climate change is occurring. So there's been national studies on this that climate variation, people who think that this is natural climate variation, it's a detriment to action because they think this is, I mean, and there's always been climate variation, we all know that, but if they don't believe in the human component, there's really no reason to do anything, right? Because it's going to happen no matter what actions we take or not. So it can be a detriment, actually, to adaptive strategies. So I'm going to move to some conclusions we came to here real quick. With an additional 272 provisionally heirloom varieties documented, we have further shown that Central and Southern Appalachia has more apple diversity than anywhere else that's been studied in North America. Most of the orchardists we have interviewed believe that climate variation is occurring, but the results are much more mixed when asked if anthropogenic climate change is occurring. The 36% of Appalachian orchardists in this study who agreed that human-induced climate change is happening is well below the national average for the United States. And this probably has a lot to do with the conservative political beliefs. They actually get a lot of their information on on the subject of climate change from their preachers at the local church. I hear them referenced all the time. Well, you know, my preacher says it's not happening. You know, well, must not be. but it's an interesting situation. And the people who aren't as conservative politically are much more open to different interpretations of what's going on. Orchardists managing orchards that have been around for three generations or longer unanimously claim to be witnessing climate variation. Political affiliation is affecting perception, as I just mentioned, as a majority of orchardists who do not believe anthropogenic climate change is occurring are Republicans. The political affiliations, as I just mentioned, are more diverse for those who do perceive climate change as a reality. Consumer demand is driving the planting of newer varieties and the replacement of heirloom varieties, and growers are not taking many precautionary actions in the face of climate change. We had one grower who mentioned diversity, agrobiodiversity, as a coping strategy. They were basically a preservationist. It was the joiners who were trained by Lee Calhoun. And then we had one person who was, like we saw in Will's slide, using air machines to circulate air throughout the orchards. And then we had one who was using a sprinkler system when it got too cold to freeze the trees and thereby protecting them from further frost damage. Or frost damage. Okay, so perhaps this trend will change, this lack of precautionary actions. Perhaps this trend will change in the coming years if what scientists are telling us about climate change continues to manifest. For in the summer of 2012, last year, when we conducted this research, nearly all the apple harvest in western North Carolina was lost due to the early onset of a warm spring, causing early apple blooms, and then a devastating frost in mid-April that ruined the apple season for nearly all the growers that we visited. So this was really, in a way, a good time to be visiting and talking to these folks. Depressing, you know, but and they all said there would be no apple industry if there wasn't for insurance, right? That's how they're surviving through these crops. And as we know, the insurance industry is very volatile. So that plays a part into what's going to happen in the future as well. On the basis of our results, we recommend that Appalachian growers utilize mountain microclimate variation to their advantage, a theme we've heard throughout this session, planting earlier blooming varieties higher on slopes in thermal zones with good circulation and later blooming varieties in the cooler pockets at the base of hills. The incredible amount of Appalachian apple biodiversity can be used as a resource for mitigating climate change. Economic opportunities, such as the current trend toward appreciation and revival of slow and heritage foodways, could be an outlet for orchardists who are otherwise being forced to grow modern market varieties that are highly susceptible to an increasingly unpredictable and volatile weather regime.